We'll reference a university library today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Mary Heinzman, director of St. Ambrose University's library, is our guest today on Scribble. Mary, what is the difference between a university library and a public library? Is there a difference?
Well, to be honest, not a lot of difference. Our library, for example, is an academic library, but we serve the general public. Anyone can come in and use our services. So I guess the biggest difference might be that we might have a little more in-depth kinds of things, resources, that would support, you know, scholarly research, but it also can help answer just about any question the general public
might have. You don't concentrate on bestsellers?
Well, we actually have some of those, so we call it leisure reading, as opposed to, you know, scholarly reading. But
how do you decide? You can't buy every book there. It's incredible. I just read that last year in the United States there were 330,000 books published.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That did not include the self-published books.
Right.
Which the total of which adds up to over 700,000.
And we could
Out of that, how many can you order in a year?
We can never buy that many.
How many?
we average about 10,000 is all.
You have 10,000 books your library.
New books a year, yeah.
New works a year?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, roughly.
I would have guessed 800.
Oh, no. At the outset. We do more than that, yeah.
Where do you put them all?
Well, we always are weeding things out, too, as we go. So if we buy a bunch of new ones, we remove outdated things. You know, like medical books, they get out of date, and we don't want bad information. So we pull those off the shelf and put the new ones on. So.
And now you can't personally go and order 10,000 books. Do you have?
No, I don't do it all myself, no. There are 7 librarians there, and each librarian is in charge of certain subject areas. And so they all order books in those subject areas.
One of the things that intrigued me when I looked, you know, at the staff of the St. Ambrose Library, 4 reference librarians, and I got to thinking, reference librarians, that job must have changed over time.
Yes.
Because it used to be you just collected books.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough anymore, is it?
No. The librarians do a wide range of things. We even have a special media services librarian who just deals with technology stuff, you know. But each librarian has a certain subject that they liaison with and help the faculty in those areas and the students in those areas. They purchase the books in those areas. But we all teach information literacy now, too, which is a credit course designed to help students weed out bad information and find the good things that are out there.
Oh, well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Well, how do you do that?
It's always a struggle.
Textbook?
No, not a textbook, but we have divided it into kind of modules. And so we talk about print materials, we talk about websites, we talk about electronic resources and how can you determine what's good. So you look at, you know, who the author is, what their credentials are. You look at how old it is. You look at, on the website, what kind of website is it? Is it biased in a certain direction or does it kind of give an overview of things? We look at all those kinds of things. We try to help the students figure that out.
Is that something that all students are required to take?
They are at our institution,
okay.
Yes.
Which is good, right?
Yeah. And they really need it because there is so much stuff out there now.
Garbage.
And you know that.
So what do you do?
Garbage.
What do you tell them about something like Wikipedia?
Well, actually, Wikipedia is not too bad.
It can be wrong.
It can be wrong, yes. And so we actually have in one class, we have a Wikipedia editing session where we show them how they can edit
okay.
uh, an article in Wikipedia, and then what happens to it, because once you make a change on a Wikipedia article, it's reviewed, and your changes may or may not get posted live. So we show them what happens. So we have them do a little research on a topic, then edit the article in Wikipedia, and then see what happens.
So Wikipedia articles, I'm not familiar at all with it. Wikipedia articles are generally getting more and more accurate?
Yes, I would say so, yes. They have a team of editors on their staff that are paid to do that kind of work, but then they also depend on volunteers. And as volunteers put things on Wikipedia, they have to include citations. So that's one of the things we show our students, how to do a correct citation and cite what they just put in Wikipedia, and then those are checked, and sometimes the stuff is removed if it's not accurate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have a section on cat videos?
We could probably refer you to some cat videos if you'd like some.
Oh, dear. But, you know, it seems to me, I'm an old codger, and I really don't like the fact that young people are using iPhones. I think you're not going to learn to think that way if you get an immediate answer. You should.
Yes.
That doesn't lead to habits of contemplation and so on.
I would agree.
How do you balance those things? Or how do you get students to balance those things?
Well, that's one of the another goal of our information literacy class, is to get students to think about stuff and critically evaluate it and not just accept it at face value because it's on Google or whatever. You know, they have to really look at it, and we ask them questions and lead them through we almost have to lead them through the evaluation, get them to look at all sides of something, and hope that they will continue to do that at least while they're in college. So,
mm-hmm. You've been there for 20 years now, you say.
Almost, yeah.
How has it changed? How have students changed? How has the use of the library changed?
It's changed a lot. So when I first came, you walked into the atrium and we had 6 computers right in the middle of the floor, and that was all we had in the whole building, was 6 computers. And students had to wait to take turns to use them, and they were very slow. Sometimes if you were looking something up, it could take you hours. Students didn't have their own phones, you know, like they do now, the cell phone, you know, the mm-hmm. instant smartphone thing. And so they would wait, or they'd sit and read, or, you know. Now we have close to 75 computers in the library, as well as the students bring their own in, and then they also have their smartphones, so that it's technology's everywhere.
Do you still have that old-fashioned thing called a card catalog?
We saved one in the back. It's in the back room, mostly for nostalgia purposes, but our librarians are kind of fond of it. So
I'm an old fuddy-duddy, but I miss the card catalog. I discovered more interesting stuff by just going too far when I was looking for material.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
That's hard to do today.
It is.
Although
you can get, if you're on the internet, you can start clicking on things, and pretty soon you're down a rabbit hole far away from where you started. And you.
Yeah, but I just love going, ooh, look at this,
look at this.
Keep going, keep going. You know?
Well, we still have one. You can come over and I'll show it to you if you want to.
Okay. But so those 10,000 books you add each year, does that go in the card catalog?
Not anymore. We've stopped adding things since about maybe 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So how does a student access a book now?
Now it's all electronic. It's all on the computer. We have a card catalog on the computer where they type in their subject term or their author or their, and click the button, and it brings up a list of the things we have that match what they're looking for.
Over time, do you find as many kids reading as there used to be?
I think there was a drop-off for a while, but now it seems that they're coming back around. So I had mentioned to you earlier, we have a leisure reading collection. It's our bestsellers. We have a little corner set up with those on a shelf and a comfy couch. And now I see people there all the time just sitting down on the couch and picking up a book and reading for fun. I think they get tired of reading so much for all their classes, you know, and it's just... Mm-hmm. kind of fries their brain, so they sit and read something for fun once in a while.
I think even Kindle went through a where everybody was going to Kindle. And now that's dropped off a little, and
yep,
people are going, I still have to have a book that I can hold and I can smell and I can feel. And
me too. I love the smell of books.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, my wife was an avid reader and her eyes were failing. It got down to the point where she was using a small magnifying glass and going one word a time. She no longer had the strength to hold a book. So I would buy a book and slice it into sections so it was light enough for her to hold.
Sure.
I still have those sliced books somewhere in the house. And now I find myself, my hands, sometimes trying to hold on to a book and so on, it becomes very fatiguing. Mm-hmm. And I find that discouraging because I want to sit and read for hours if I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but books as physical objects, you don't want to give them up. If you're addicted to books,
right.
You really don't. I don't want to read anything on a computer if I can help it.
Yeah.
Now, that's how anchored to the past I am.
But now we also have books on CD. You can listen to them.
Oh, yeah. We went through that, too. I bought a bunch of those for her. And then after her death, I gave them all to the local library. Mm-hmm. About, I don't know, close to 100 of them. Yeah, we tried everything because she was determined to keep reading.
Yeah.
And once you're into reading, I think that's one of the great pleasures of life.
Yes.
Let me turn for a minute to magazines. That seems to me to be a special problem since any magazine article practically is available on the internet. Why order a magazine?
Well,
or do you anymore?
We do. At one point in time, we had subscriptions to about 700 different magazines and journals. We're down to about 200 now. We've had to cancel that, a lot of them, just because they're full text online. Although they're not freely available. We have to pay a subscription fee to a database in order to get the full text of the whole journal or magazine. So that actually has been proven to be a good thing for us, especially when you have students who can't come to the library, who live off campus. They can go online and read those articles and get what they need to do their homework. So that's been actually very helpful to us.
What's the traffic flow through your library?
It's changed, and we don't actually count how many people come in, but there are a lot. And it used to be they would come in to sit and either use the computer or come and ask questions. Now it's more they come in just to be in the place, in the library. And it might be that they're sitting quietly talking to their friends, or they might be working on a group project in a study room. But it's more the library is a place for them to be and not just a, quote, library.
You don't discourage talking in the library? I can recall.
We do not.
When I was 5 or 6, my mother took me down to the public library in our little town, and I got a library card, and the librarian seemed to have a vocabulary that went, shh, shh. And she would sit at one end, and using mucilage, I can still smell that mucilage, to tape in, tape books that had gotten ripped and stuff like that. And boy, it was like being in church. You did not talk.
No,
but now I know it's the Augie Library. You can have coffee in there if you want.
Sure. We
I mean, it is a social gathering place.
It is. It's more of a place. And in fact, we even have a student lounge, and it has things like an exercise bicycle in there and vending machines. They go in and do those things too. Some of them even try to read while they're doing the exercise bicycle. I think that's more difficult, but It's a place for them to come and do things and interact with each other and not just a quiet library.
Well, if you read while you're on one of those things, you don't go crazy thinking, why am I wasting my time here? But one of the things I look for example, when you go out dining, is a quiet place.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find any anymore since Le Figaro closed.
Yeah.
And I imagine a library is inviting as a quiet place where you can have a quiet conversation.
It is. It is a nice quiet place, but we also have designated zones in our library where we actually have a zone on the second floor where there's no talking allowed, none, and no computers. It's sit and read or, highlight or write or do something quiet. Then we also have study rooms where you can have a group, but they shut the door and then they can talk and people don't hear them, that allows them to carry on conversations and do group work.
You obviously have a big library.
Well, it's 4 floors, so We do all have an atrium that goes up the middle, though, and that carries sound, which makes it difficult to control sometimes. So sometimes you're on the first floor and you can hear somebody on the third floor talking on their cell phone.
let's take a completely different tack. How did you get into library science in the first place?
I was an English major as an undergrad and just loved books. And I grew up in Waterloo, Iowa. And when we moved to Rockford for my husband's job, I got a job there working for the Northern Illinois Library System in Rockford. And that's an organization that provides support to the libraries in that area. And it got me thinking about libraries more. And one of the women that worked there actually kind of mentored me and said, well, you should go back to school and get your library degree. And she kept pushing me a little bit. And so finally I did, and I've never looked back. It was a great decision to do that. Love libraries.
Was Ambrose your first job?
No, actually, I've worked at the Rock Island Public Library, worked at the Davenport Public Library. I've worked here at Ambrose now for about 20 years, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's, Marion the librarian is a fixture in musical theater, but I think I remember the first time I was able to go into the main library in downtown Memphis. I'd been to the McLemore branch, which was actually just a room kind of like the old bar they used to have down the road, and without the booths and tables, but had tables and bookshelves. But to go to the main library was like entering the temple.
Oh, yeah.
And I was absolutely in awe. And that became the sacred place I wanted to spend my time in. And I found out there you could go back in the stacks.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was like being allowed into the Holy of Holies. There were all these books with the glass floors, the light underneath, yeah, and so on. It was a wonderful, wonderful place. I'll never forget that. There's just something about libraries.
Yeah.
What is the? You must have noticed changes over 20 years.
Lots of them. Yeah.
What registers most strongly with you is the big change?
Actually, I think access to the internet has pretty much changed the way libraries do business. I mean, we used to be able, when someone would come in and ask a question, a reference question, we'd pretty much be confined to using what we had in our building to answer the question. And now we can, hop on the internet. We can find a book for somebody that's out in California. So here's an example. I was helping a student who needed a very specific criticism of an author that he was writing about for an English class. We didn't have the particular book he was looking for. I hopped on the internet. I was looking around. I found a copy of it out in California, of all places. He only needed one page out of it, so I called him on the phone. I said, can you copy this and fax it to me? They did. He had his answer within 20 minutes. Otherwise that would have taken days, months, I don't know, for him to get that. Yeah. So, I mean, that's opened up new worlds for us, and to help answer questions, but it's also created issues, I think, too. It's good and bad to have so much access, because like you had mentioned earlier, there's so much junk out there on the internet. If students are trying to navigate that on their own, it's really hard for them to find things.
I was at a meeting a while back with Amy Groskopf, who's head of the Davenport Library,
mm-hmm,
and she said something I'd never even thought about. And she said she thought what the internet has done is really changed the way people write nonfiction.
Yes.
Because there isn't any fact you can't look up on the internet. So if you want to write, for instance, a story of bumblebees, it pretty much has to be memoir, how I got involved, and much more personal. And I read a lot of nonfiction of that kind, and that's true, right? It's hard to why read a book on bumblebees when you can look up it on the internet and find out, what's the average lifespan of a bumblebee? You can find that in a second. So do you discover that true with the kind of books you write that the way writing is done has changed,
yes,
been changed by the internet.
I think so too. Yeah, we tend to get a lot of books that have, I guess, two kinds: a lot of statistical kinds of books, but that are statistics from all over the world and not just like from the United States, which is what it used to be. But then we also get a lot of books about, you know, my experience with depression or my experience as a doctor, medical doctor, or, you know, those kinds of things, like you said, memoirs and those kinds of things. Yeah.
Do you order specifically for the undergraduate and the graduate programs you have? I mean, you have a really active series of graduate programs.
We do. A lot of medical programs in the graduate field. We only order things that support our curriculum. So we don't teach anything, for example, on marine biology, so you won't find much on whales or in our library.
Right, okay.
Because
well,
we
there's
don't,
a loss.
Yeah, because we don't have the space for it, you know. So we buy just the things that support what's being taught. And we in the graduate programs, our biggest strengths are we have a doctorate of business and then the health sciences, occupational therapy, physical therapy, you know, nursing, public health, those kinds of things. So I have a lot of medical kinds of books to support those, but then a lot of more general education type things for the undergrads.
Which are fairly expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they
medical
change
books
it.
Are
I mean,
very
Chaucer's
expensive.
Chaucer, and you can buy it for $1.98.
Right, exactly.
but cell biology, you know, that's new every year, and $350.
Yeah, they're very expensive.
As a biologist from Ambrose, graduating in 1950, holy mackerel. I know nothing.
No.
The stuff I learned back then is antique.
Yeah,
oh, it's amazing how rapidly the disciplines
all change.
It does,
and that's why we have to, I mentioned earlier, we pull the old medical stuff off and put the new ones on.
What kind of a special collections do you have?
Our special collections focuses on the history of St. Ambrose.
Okay.
We don't do local history like the Davenport Public does.
Right.
Just mostly on our institution and then also on the Saint Ambrose.
Okay.
So we have a big collection about him as well.
So if somebody wanted to do an article on Saint Ambrose, Saint Ambrose would be the place to go,
yes.
Right?
Yeah,
yes.
talk to Father Bud Grant and go
yes,
to the library.
There you go. Father Bud, he's a good one for that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's librarians, being a librarian is to many people a quiet work, and yet it has its excitement. It's a wonderful profession, and I congratulate you for your 20 years at St. Ambrose. Thank you very much, Mary. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Mary Heinzman, who's the Director of Libraries at St. Ambrose University. So, Roel, have you really missed your career in not being a librarian?
When I think about it, I still would have. You know, half of me, I discovered this winter when I got stuck indoors for 2 weeks in February that, you know, I've always claimed it would be possible for me to have been a hermit. The first week I was snowed in and iced in, I couldn't get my car out, I practically went bonkers. But by the second week, it got more and more tempting, and by the time I was actually ready to go outside, my wife had to push me out. I still think I could be a hermit, and a librarian is a way of being a hermit surrounded by riches.
Yeah, and you're surrounded by people, too, and yet there is such a stillness in the library, even where you're allowed to talk.
Right.
It is, and as I say, it seemed to me to be kind of a temple. One of the things that I found fascinating is she used to subscribe to, 700 magazines or something like that, down to only 200. I got thinking about magazines, and that brought me to Lapham's Quarterly. Just got the spring issue recently. This is a fascinating magazine, would you call this?
Journal. It's not a journal either.
No, but it's bound. It's a soft cover, but it's like a book almost, over 200 pages. And Lewis Lapham is one of the great essayists of our time. He started this, And it can. He picks one topic. In spring, it's trade.
Right.
And he ranges back through the entire history of the West and actually of the East for articles. And the thing that knocks me out is all these little quotations about every third page. Okay, here's one. The sea serves the pirate as well as the trader. I thought, how's he going to do for trade what he did for everything else? But he does.
I wondered that very same thing, because his other stuff has seemed natural. The one in the fall was called Night. Mm-hmm. And it was all about darkness and night coming and getting through the night. It was divided into evening, night, and morning.
Yeah. Right? Here's one. The merchant always has fresh losses to expect, and the dread of base poverty forbids his rest. From Decimus Magnus Ausonius in 390. I don't know where he gets this stuff. But poetry and articles and quotations, and it makes for a fascinating read. And the nice thing about it is you can just dip into it, or you can spend an evening going through it. Because it's about, this one's about trade, but I never knew there were so many different aspects.
I go through first and I look for all the poems. Then I look for all the aphorisms. And then I read the longer articles. It is the strangest journal I've ever come across, but because it's all on one limited subject. Yeah. And it goes back through history to the Greeks and before.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It must be fun to put this together. They put out 4 a year, but imagine ranging back through time to discover all that you can about a particular subject and then choosing something that seems appropriate, and yet in the unity of the single subject to find so much diversity.
Right.
That takes some doing, and that makes Lapham's Quarterly an interesting magazine. Now, you can find this at libraries, probably libraries, but even at bookstores. When I go to Barnes & Noble, I see a copy of Lapham's in the magazine.
You can
rack.
Subscribe, and occasionally there are deals. I think I got a letter once, you could get all 4 issues for $40, which is a steal.
Yeah. That's true. And they occasionally offer back issues that you can go. I went back and bought about 3 or 4 issues that I had missed. And then last year they put out 2 special ones that were not in subscriptions. I remember one was on fake news.
Right.
It's really great. So, magazines are not dead. They're still around, and I still subscribe to a bunch of them. But of all the group, I think Lapham's Quarterly is one that almost anybody would find interesting. And I think the annual rate has gone up from $49 a year, but it's something you might want to look into. Lapham's Quarterly. Am I pronouncing that correct?
I don't know whether it's Lapham or he was editor of the Atlantic, was it?
Something like that.
Harper's, yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
But anyway, that's our program for today. Spend time at the library, but then come back to join us next week. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll see you next time on Scribble.